Hello, everybody, and welcome to our insulin resistance practitioner training program call that I'm here to support you. We're here to discuss whatever it is content-wise, if there's any questions, any confusions, any clarifying things you need to handle with me, but also how an application. I've had a couple of calls recently with program members, and I'm really excited about the enthusiasm for the content, but also the care at which people are going through. You know, I take for granted, having been in practice for, you know, almost like over two and a half decades, and that things just, they get second nature to you. And I don't realize, you know, there is a lot of depth in that course, and there's probably 15 or so hours of videos for you to really sink your teeth into, and a lot of really great resources. And I really appreciate you guys being committed and really wanting to change the world with this stuff. And more I talk to people in the outside world, I realize how little is really known about this and an approach that we can take to educating people, you know, just in our everyday lives. And it's shocking to me how even functional medicine practitioners are just not looking at insulin resistance the way we are. And I really appreciate your dedication to doing the best. But I wanted to share with you, for those of you who are either just starting in practice or want to be getting started in practice, I came up with an idea with someone this morning that I thought I would share. You know, we have the 30-day metabolic reset, and we have the two-page metabolic reset at a glance document, and it's in Sweet Spot, and it's in the insulin resistance training. And I had an idea for taking someone through, like, or a group, like doing a 5-day or 7-day challenge. Those are really popular these days on Facebook and in general in program online. And you could do it locally, or you could do it online. Locally would be fun if you can get a group of 5 or 6 people together and just encourage them with doing a 5 to 7 day insulin resistance reset. And yeah, they're not going to get completely reset, and they're not going to be able to, you know, go back and eat a lot of the foods that they took out. But just in general, taking them through and having them follow the guidelines and the green foods on that sheet for 5 to 7 days. And I think you could get a lot of really good results and get people interested in going further and going deeper. So just a food for thought that I thought I'd throw out there for you guys. So the way that these calls work is, if you have a question, a comment, something you want addressed, raise your hand if you're on the call with a *2, or hit the button that says raise hand on the web call. And if you're just on the chat, that you could type it into either the chat or the Q&A box. I know sometimes people have difficulties typing into one or the other for whatever reason. It must be something unique to each and everybody's system with the Instant Teleseminar interface, but you can type it either way. I'm going to start with the chat because the Q&A, because I've invited folks to, if they can't make the call, to type in there. All right, so I am going to lower all the hands. So if you have a question, have a comment, just want to share a success or a struggle, a challenge, go ahead and raise your hand, *2. And I have an interesting little anecdote I'll tell you all, or not necessarily an anecdote, but it's more of a little story. My son is 25, and he's in grad school, just finished grad school, and he's living in Washington, D.C., and he's always been into health since he's born. He's been on a plant-based diet, Whole Foods, since he's born. And he said to me, I told him yesterday about, you know, some things happening in our business and taking on new clients in our year-long program. And he said, you know, Mom, it's so frustrating when my friends come and ask me, how can I get fit and how can I get healthy? And I give them great advice, but they don't listen to it. And I thought that was so interesting. Here's a 25-year-old kid that, you know, I think he's a kid because he's my kid, but he's seeing the same thing. And I said, you know what, sweetie, I said, even when they pay me to give them that advice, they don't always follow it. So that's just the way it is. And he was just shocked. He goes, wow, you know, I can't believe people would pay you and not take your advice. So you're going to hit that. You're going to see that a lot. And the trick is, and as you get more and more practiced in this, is hitting people from a standpoint that really motivates. And it's going to be different from person to person, but when you can really figure out their hook and what's going to help them to stay connected to their outcome and stay connected to what they want most and stay connected to their health being the most important thing, they're going to get through it. Now, there's the biochemical issues, right? People keep gravitating towards sugar. Why? There's the emotional issues. People gravitate towards sugar and flour and crackers and breads and stuff because of emotional issues. But your job as a practitioner is to help them to understand the underlying piece that derails them and help them to not get derailed so easily. So I just thought I'd share that. So star 2 raises your hands. I don't see any hands raised, but I love speaking with you. I love that better than answering typed in questions, but I'm going to go ahead with the Q&A and see the typed in questions because there's a couple from Kiki. That looks like it's exactly the same. Okay. It looks like she typed it in twice. So she said, I'm not sure I'll be able to make the call, and then and this was both at 20. Yes, sometimes that happens. The same question gets typed in twice. She said, I hope I'm not sure I'm able to make the call. Three questions. Okay, first question. I'm not sure how many IRSPT calls we have left, but after that, going forward, what are the ongoing support options for practitioners? You have the vital calls, but those are for personal questions. I'm not ready to continue studying the other programs right now, so what are my options for practitioner support calls? Well, right now we don't have, other than NEPT, which has ongoing for, you know, years, we don't have a program for getting additional access to our office hours calls. You do have office hours calls for IRSPT for 5 months. So this, you have this one plus an office hours calls, which you should all be getting invitations to. You have 3 months of these, just specifics for this call, and there's one more after this. But then you have 2 months after that. So it actually goes through, I think, the end of the year with calls for this program. So other options for getting support is to join CMDS, which is our Digestive Mastery Call program, and you get 5 months of calls with that. And we have our insulin, our NEPT full certification. And stay tuned, because in the fall, we will be announcing sub-programs under that that we can get you can get access to, and those will include office hours for practitioners. I've been thinking and toying about starting a Vital-like program for practitioners. It would be priced higher than Vital, but that hasn't happened yet. So stay tuned. Number two, can you please explain what category do digestive enzymes fall under? Is it like a med or a supplement? It is a supplement. It's definitely not a medication. It's actually supplying something that your body should be making in sufficiency, but because of the altered diet lifestyle, you know, not so great habits that people have, they don't make enough. Sorry, I'm drinking water. Is it something that's safe for most people to take? And is it safe for me to recommend? It is safe for most people to take. I'd go with caution with somebody who has had an ulcer or been diagnosed with gastritis, because it means that the lining of their stomach, the protective lining, has been altered, and there's proteolytic enzymes in that, protein digestive enzymes in digestive enzyme formulations. And with those, if the lining is altered, the mucous membrane isn't protecting, and those proteolytic enzymes might start to break down the lining. So that's the only caution that I would have, although, you know, depending on somebody's allergies, you know, whatever the source is of those. Some of those are sourced from Saccharomyces, which is a yeast kind of a organism. And if people are super sensitive to that, they could have a problem. But I usually start every supplement low and slow. Start with a tiny amount, especially in somebody who's sensitive, and they've said, and I always ask the question, you know, have you taken supplements before? Do you find that there's some supplements that aggravate you? Do you find that you have to start slow? Same thing with medications. And if you know their genes, you can always, you know that. So there. is it something that's safe for most people to take? And is it, sometimes people tell me that they are very bloated when starting with the greens and smoothies. So I feel suggesting a digestive enzyme would be beneficial. Yes, it would be. But also stomach acid is very important. When people get bloated, it's often because they don't have enough HCl being produced from greens. They get bloated from greens. So what I generally do is I'm not a huge fan of supplementing HCl unless we absolutely know they need it. But what I am a fan of is triggering the body to make more of its own HCl. So again, caution. If somebody has an ulcer, you've got to heal the lining. If somebody has reflux and they're having burning pain, you've got to do some slippery elm and DGL, and that's all covered in our digestive cause to heal that. But with stimulating HCl, it would be more like you do bitters. There's bitters formulations in an herbal format. There's things like dandelion and arugula, which can be juiced or chewed to a pulp like for 5 minutes before a meal, like 10 minutes before a meal. And then also making sure the zinc is sufficient. And zinc is important for making the digestive enzymes as well as making the stomach acid. So zinc is super important, and most people are low in zinc. Can you shed some light or give an explanation of a male 40 that just started working with, right now his fasting blood sugar is all over the place, ranging from 94 to sometimes 126, and every day something different, with all kinds of numbers in between, like 105, 113, 125, 100. I'm wondering if this is typical for some people. He doesn't eat much during the day due to his busy work schedule. Then in the evening, prior to eating, his blood sugar is sometimes as low as 80. Right now, he eats lots of unhealthy foods for dinner, as well as eats in bed before he goes to sleep. Definitely something we need to work on. Well, eating unhealthy foods in the evening and eating right before bed is going to cause mess, is going to mess with his blood sugars in the morning. So I can't really explain it other than he needs to stop that. He needs to stop the unhealthy foods at night. Sometimes, you know, I would have him check his blood sugar after eating during the day, and after eating his evening meal and before going to bed. So you want to see always, if somebody has weird blood sugars in the morning, you always want to see what it is right before they go to sleep. Is it the same and it's not going down during the night? Is it higher and it is going down? Or is it lower and it's going up during the night? And then we can assess what's really going on with him. But he's got to change those habits. Sometimes, though, if he's not checking throughout the day, you want to make sure the meter is accurate. So I would have him go ahead and test it 5 times in a row with this same meter. And it has to be within 5 minutes. I usually do it right after each other, just to make sure the meter is actually presenting the same number or close to the same number. It could be off by 5 to 8 points because that's just the lack of accuracy of these, you know, cheapo meters. But I would check that and make sure that it's not the meter that's crazy. But when you describe that he seriously is eating poorly at night, and it may be that some nights he eats worse than others, some nights he eats more than others. So have him check his blood sugar right before he goes to bed and see if there's a trend with higher at night, higher in the morning. Thank you so much for today. And for always, love you. Thank you so much, Kiki. And yeah, we'll work on some other aspects, other options for you guys getting support, but we really encourage you to join in some way, shape, or form, you know, and stay with the community. And we'll be offering some additional courses that you can do, and cumulatively over time builds up to the full NEPT certification, and you'll get ongoing support that way. All right. So that's the only question. I'm going to refresh to see if anybody else typed in. No. Okay, and I'm going to go to chat, and I see hot. Chris says, does hot flashes mean insulin spikes? Huh, not necessarily. I don't know if maybe there was something that came before that I missed when you put my name in. Chris, but hot flashes mean insulin spikes. You know, it doesn't necessarily. There are a lot of things. It's usually fluctuations in the estrogen progesterone levels. Either because a woman's going through menopause, but sometimes I see it happen in men that have altered androgens and androgen to estrogen ratios, et cetera. And also has to do with an aromatase enzyme as well. Jasmine says, no, I've never thought about that. I think there means there's some hormonal imbalance. Yes, absolutely. Nanette, I was taught that hot flashes can be. Yeah, they can be. They can be blood sugar. If they sweat a lot, it usually spikes sugars. Yeah, so here's the thing. If they have hot flashes, it could cause insulin levels to spike, to go up or down. If they have insulin spikes, it could cause hot flashes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they are. Shannon, how do we increase DHEA? All right, so it's really a matter of looking for what's the cause of low DHEA. So if DHEA is low because cortisol is high because of lots of stress, the way we increase DHEA is we decrease cortisol. Now, in some people who the DHEA is very low and the cortisol high, I'll oftentimes temporarily supplement with the DHEA. You can get liquid DHEA from a company called Biomatrix. I generally don't agree with large dosing and dosing DHEA in capsules because you can't really control the amount. And a lot of people take 25, 50, 100 milligrams, and I think it's putting you into a place of physiologic overload. It's more than the body would normally make, and all of the hormones have this pattern of negative feedback. So if the levels go too high, it stops the actual production on our own. So what we want to do is increase the production. So we could add pregnenolone, which is a hormone that precedes all of the hormones, and that allows the body to produce down where we want to go. So if the reason for low DHEA is high cortisol and the person's been under a lot of stress, we have to address the stress. We have to do, whether it's heart math or tapping or meditation, and teach the person how to get out of those stressful responses. And then we look at adaptogens. We look at vitamin C because the adrenals really wonk out the vitamin C pretty quickly. We look at vitamin B, especially B5, because it's an important one for helping the body to make all those steroid hormones. And we go through this a lot in our reproduction module in NEPT. Chris, I've noticed I experience hot flashes after eating protein. Sometimes that used to happen to me 10 years ago when I was insulin resistance. Every time I ate. So I'm wondering if hot flashes mean insulin spikes. So you can tell if your insulin is spiking. You can't really do an insulin home test like we can glucose, but what's happening with your glucose? Protein generally doesn't spike insulin. It depends on what, but although heavy protein has been shown to spike insulin. Let me take that back. There have been some studies that showed that high intakes of eggs, whey protein, and animal protein can cause us up in insulin without an up in sugar. But usually an increase in insulin will often result in a low blood sugar after. So I would monitor everything according to the way we teach it. Christina, do we have a specific treatment approach for patients with endometriosis? Quite frankly, Christina, I don't have a specific approach for any disease because what I do is I look for what's the root cause. What's the imbalance that's causing the endometriosis? Is it too much estrogen in relationship to progesterone? Is it too little progesterone, but the estrogen is fine? Is it related to an inflammatory process? It isn't an inflammatory process, but is it related to inflammation that's happening throughout the body? In which case I might look at, things like turmeric and fatty acids. I would be looking at the whole person. What's the problem? Is it a digestive issue? Is it a blood sugar issue? So we really want to look at the whole person, not the disease. Shannon, can you explain the omega-3 and 6 chart? I don't understand how to read it on the daily intake chart. Yeah, so if you're looking at omega-3 and 6, are you talking about the one that's a spreadsheet and I have the levels of stuff and you can fill in what you're eating and how much? Is that the one? Okay. So we want our omega-6s to be in balance with our 3s. Most people have way more omega-6 than 3, which leads to inflammation in the body and also can lead to clotting. So on that chart, I allow you to put in, you put in an amount. Say you eat 2 tablespoons or 2 ounces of hemp seeds and 6 ounces of almonds or whatever else and 4 ounces of fish. You put it in on that chart and it will calculate for you how much omega-3 and how much omega-6. We're targeting to have the omega 6-3 ratio be 3-1 or less. So if we look at a food like chia seeds, if you were to just put chia seeds on that chart, you'd see that it comes out to be 0.2 omega 6, 0.22, I think exactly, omega 6-1-3, which means, wow, that's a really high, good source of omega 3. If you put almonds in there, you're going to see it's 71 parts omega 6-1 part omega 3. So very heavily omega 6. So I would be focusing on helping people to balance so they have more omega 3 sources and less in the omega 6 sources. Would CO2 on blood report be connected to sugar? CO2 on the blood report will be related to acid versus alkaline. So that's what that usually means, not necessarily sugar. I mean, there may be that a person who's more acidic may have tendencies to higher sugar, but you have to look at the more specific things related to sugar. So yeah, that's what I would look at. Yeah. Okay. So that's all that's typed into the chat. I'm going to look at the Q&A again, and then I'll go back to the. Okay. So. Who's here? All right, so we have Nanette and Gail Williams. So Nanette first. Hi, Nanette.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. Welcome.
Okay, I was the blood sugar one.
Okay.
Well, when I was taking Krasny's classes 15 years ago when I first started, my CO2 has been low my whole life, and they suggested I pull up my blood sugar. They said it could be acidosis or B1 deficiency. Mm-hmm. But when I actually got my blood glucose up higher, my CO2 went up. That's why I was asking that question. And then having heard, I've been taking a lot of your different classes, I'm trying, because I was always in the 70s and low 80s. Well, now I'm, after listening to you, I'm willing to go back down to those numbers.
Yeah.
But I don't, my diet's very alkaline, so the only thing I can figure is cortisol is causing it.
Yeah, it could be. It could be, and it could be that when your sugar is down, your body is going into emergency mode to try to bring it up. So it's relying on sugar. You don't have, you probably, if you got a ketone meter, you probably have low ketones. And so I would say measure your sugars, measure your ketones. So where's your sugar now fasting? Is it still in the 80s or has it gone up?
I tried to make it go into the 90s and I got it up there. Yeah. And then the CO2 went up. But last time it was back in the, mid 80s. And so
I wouldn't look at raising your sugar in the 90s has been shown to increase your cardiovascular risk, your blood pressure, hypertension risk, not a good idea. So I would keep your sugar in the ideal range, see what it does in the 80s, but really look at why are your numbers coming out that way?
Right? Well, I'm asking you because, okay, then that led me into the question about the adrenal medulla versus the adrenal cortex, because again, back 15 years ago when I started interpreting blood work and stuff, I felt I had the adrenal medulla symptoms and not. And I'm wondering, does pumping epinephrine and norepinephrine, does that play with the blood sugar?
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's what I figured. So I would need, like you said, to be working on the C and everything else, what's causing this?
Yeah. Have you done any sort of adrenal stress testing, Dutch testing?
Yeah, my Dutch said I was a little low in pregnenolone, a little low in DHEA. My hormones were off. They were all low. Like I said, I'm almost 70. And someone just said, well, be happy you have energy and your health is as good as it is. And I thought, that's not a good answer.
No. No. So, yeah. You know, here's the thing. I'm just going to put it out there. A lot of people don't know how to interpret those reports. A lot of people look at, oh, yeah, you're fine, but they don't look at the absolutes. They don't look at the ratios. They don't look at the metabolites. So if you've just done the saliva test, I'd highly encourage you to do the Dutch test.
No, I did the Dutch test.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes, and I'm low in DHEA. I'm low, not real low, low in DHEA, pregnenolone, and I...
Well, it doesn't test pregnenolone, so that's why I didn't think it was the DHEA.
Well, they don't test per se, but in their little write-up, because they did do a little write-up, they and showed their little charts, you know how they do?
Mm-hmm.
They did say in my Dutch test, I might want to look at my adrenals.
So on your Dutch test, did you do the one with just the sex hormones, or did you do the one with the adrenals, with the cortisol, the free cortisol, the metabolites?
I did the one that was the most expensive. It had the cortisol and everything. And I was, yeah.
So how was your free versus metabolized cortisol?
Oh, I should have that out for the next one.
Yeah,
I should have
you do that, and we can talk
or
about
send
it.
Send it in ahead of time so you can see it. The one thing is they said my night one didn't work right. It was too diluted. And that's probably because I have to travel to the States and I'm very tired. And I just wondered if you're under heavy stress sleeping on couches and stuff.
It does. It makes a difference. If you know, I like when people take them under their normal circumstances. Somebody asked me, you know, I have a really busy week at work next week. It's going to be really stressful. Should I take it? And no, take it under normal circumstances.
Okay, so with the Dutch test, the reason I did that is I wanted to be able to send it right in and not have to hold it in my fridge.
Mm.
But is it better to hold it in the fridge and just the minute I cross the border, send it in?
Okay, say that again.
I live.
You wanted to cross the border to send it in. They won't take it from Canada?
Okay, I live 4 hours. I live about 5 hours south of the border in Baja, Mexico.
Oh, in Mexico. Okay,
I thought it would be better if I got to the States, did the test, but it is a very, very long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably better. They say you can store it for how long? I think 24 hours, they say.
Well, they say longer, but if I did it again, I would do it just the day before I went up and put it in and take it out. And
then make sure you take a cooler with you and keep it cold the whole time
and
then do it. Because I think when, you know, if you take the test right after you've done this 4 or 5 hour drive.
Six hour crossing the border.
Border. Oh.
So that night I noticed it said, oh, you have to have so many glasses of water. So I drank them. And they wrote me back, you were too diluted at night. So I got 3 of the readings for the cortisol and cortisol. And it was going up during the day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And at night it would have put me out of bounds, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
So your focus would be, what are you going to do to reduce your stress on a regular basis? And then support your adrenals because you're wonking out your vitamin C. And sometimes you're taking the DHEA. Like a lot of times people take the test and they're doing a lot of the right things, but they haven't been doing the right things for a while. Do you know what I mean? They haven't.
I think vitamin C was my downfall because somebody said, oh, don't do so much C, you're kicking your adrenals. And I backed off on C, but I got back into increasing C, and I always do a little bit of DHEA and a little bit of pregnenolone because I muscle test low on it. So
okay, yeah. And then make sure if you can support your body making more pregnenolone with B5. B5 is a cofactor in the conversion of cholesterol to pregnenolone. So if you ever have, just as a hint for everybody, if you have somebody who has low sex hormones or low DHEA and high cholesterol, there's something going on in that pathway because they should be converting the cholesterol downstream into pregnenolone so it can make the rest of the hormones. Vitamin B5 is super, super important there. Most of the studies show around 500 milligrams 3 times a day, which is a very hefty dose.
Yeah, it is.
To make more pregnenolone.
Okay, my other problem is I tend to have very low cholesterol. I've been as low as 120. So between blood sugar and cholesterol, I worked on getting
cholesterol. All right, so the B5 isn't an issue for you then. Hold the B5.
Okay.
So
I don't try to have low cholesterol. It just, it's always worked out that way.
How high, how low is your cholesterol?
Well, I brought it up into the 170s. It was as low as 120. Krasnian saw it at 150 and said, you need to get this cholesterol up. Aren't you bouncing?
No, 150 is fine. He's wrong. I think
He didn't want it going lower.
No, I wouldn't want it low. I think around 150. So, you know, 145 to 170. But I don't like it higher than 170, 180.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's higher than that, then I want to do an advanced lipid panel. I want to see the LDL, VLDL, the buoyancy, particles, the whole bit, just to see if it's okay or not okay. You want to look at CRP, homocysteine. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you want to look at. But I don't like it too low, but although some people can do okay on too low, but too low, you're not making enough sex hormones.
Well, that's what I figured. I had progesterone signs and different things. That's why I tried.
Yeah. So with the gut, it shows you your ratios of your 4, your 2, and your 16 hydroxy.
Right.
Those are important to look at. And again, you know, before anybody does any bioidentical supplementation, I want to see what those ratios are. I want to look at the E1, E2, and see if E1 plus E2 should be less than or equal to E3. So safely, you can supplement E3. Because it's protective.
Right.
Estradiol is the more proliferative one. So we want to make sure the ratios are there, because even if you're low in all of them, which we expect after menopause, but if you're too low and you start to supplement and your ratios are off, your body's going to maintain those ratios unless you do something about it. So there's a whole bunch more to go into with that.
There is. And I looked at the ratios and I had gotten a person in Mexico, and I realized I knew more than she did. She gave estradiol cream, and I quit immediately.
Yeah.
Because I have to find somebody that really knows what they're doing, because the ratios, I shouldn't have had estradiol.
And a lot of people don't really look at it. They just look at blood, and they're giving people stuff. And when I look at, you know, somebody recently, he had testosterone, low testosterone, but when I looked at his Dutch, he was making tons of estrogen. His estrogen was super high. And he wanted to take testosterone. I said, you're going to take testosterone, it's just going to make more estrogen.
Yeah.
So we worked on aromatase. We worked on it. It was slowly getting down. He was impatient. He went, and the doctor said, let me give you some testosterone. It was a small dose. It wasn't that high, but he came back with the Dutch next. His estrogen was through the roof. His testosterone was through the roof. Everything was through the roof. And his 4-hydroxy, which is the dangerous one, was very high. I said, I know you're a guy and you don't worry about breast cancer, but this profile is a breast cancer profile. You can't do this, right? You've got to fix the problem, and you can't just look at small pieces of it, small windows. They don't even check all 3 estrogens on blood. They only usually just check estradiol.
And I know.
You can be making, it's crazy. It drives me nuts. So,
and that's what she did. And then when I found through a different person online, I could order a Dutch, because I've been wanting to do that. Then I did that. And then I just said, no more going to this person. They don't know what they're doing, because they're just doing blood. Like you said, it's only estradiol. It's only testosterone. And I knew that was not the way to go. So thank you so much. And I will get that out and get it to you next time so I can see better.
Well, use the IME file uploader and I'll see it before the call.
Thank you so much. So that's very helpful.
Yeah, you're very welcome. All right. Gail. Wait, let me open you, Gail. You're not open yet. It takes a few clicks. There we go. Now you should be open. Hi, Gail.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my question. I really appreciate that. I have a colleague who is also in functional medicine nutrition, and she's up in Canada, so we couldn't really get any current labs because of healthcare cuts, but she does all the right things, and she has been for years. but her blood sugar levels, her averages are about 65.
65?
Yeah. No matter what, like when she wakes up, it will be about 78, but within 10 minutes of rising, it goes down to 65, and it pretty much stays there all day, even after working out, which she does.
Even after eating?
Exercise.
It doesn't go up after eating?
So now after eating, it will go up. She said the highest it's gone up to is 113, but within 40 to 60 minutes, it's back down.
Okay.
She's
hyperinsulin. She's making too much insulin. That's her issue.
That's cool. That's exactly what I thought. Yay. Okay.
Yeah.
Not that she's making too much, but yay, I'm on track.
Making
okay.
too much insulin. Yes.
Okay. So is that so definitely a pancreatic thing, right? So,
you got to look at why. So are you looking at, when you say she's doing all the right things, tell me more. Does she?
Sure. Sure. Because we both studied under Andrea Nakayama, and she always taught us don't jump to diagnoses. So that's always worst for insufficiency or deficiency. And I was even thinking of adrenals. She's sleeping 7 to 8 hours. Her diet is very clean. She does eat some grains, though.
Does she do postprandial mapping? Does she check her sugar before, do the every 15 minutes, do it with every food and figure out what is it that causes it to go way high?
She's just starting to do that. She just was able to get a glucose meter. She had a hard time being able to get one up there. So,
up there, you can get the Freestyle Libre over the counter up there.
Really? I'll have to let her know that. Okay. Well, she does have one now. I think the thing was she wanted one that was kind of digital and she could sync to a lot of different things. So, okay. But she is doing that now.
In my experience, like the iHealth one and the Dart, Dario, whatever, are generally not as accurate.
That's what I told her.
10 of them or 12 of them, they're not as accurate as the others.
Okay. I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
Right.
If she can get a Freestyle Libre, even just for a month of tracking, she can get it. She can get the patches. You don't even have to get the meter anymore because the iPhone will do it. If she has an iPhone, I think 7 or higher, the iPhone app will do it. So you just have to get the little patches, the sensors. So you just try it for a month and see.
I'll let her know that. Yeah. Okay. Because she has been eating clean. She's been sleeping.
Oops, I lost you.
So what she's noticing is now she wants to kind of linger in bed, and where she was never a napper, she all of a sudden really is desiring these little cat naps. She said she feels like her foot has come off of the gas pedal in terms of energy. And so, I was just trying to think, that's what I was thinking, too much insulin. Not sure why too much insulin,
You got to get to the root cause. Now it could be adrenal. It could be that she's been for years running on cortisol, and her cortisol levels have been raising her blood sugar, which then produces more insulin, and she produces plenty, and it puts it down. I would definitely run her. I would run her if she can get an A1C and an insulin. I think it would be
that really- I have. Her A1C is 4. She said it usually is always between 4.6, 4.9. That she's able to get.
Okay, so that was saying that she is mostly low. But
yeah.
Her average looks like in the 80s, so she is mostly low. But it's
low.
In the 80s, not the 60s, with that range of A1C. So that she is getting some spikes. But I bet it's not the food. I bet it's the stress.
She's had a bit of stress this past year. And that's what we were just talking about earlier today, that, it could be the stress. Her ferritin is 7. That's what it was the last time. And she said her cholesterol tends to always run low.
Yeah. Ferritin? Is that in U.S. numbers, ferritin? Because that's very
low. She converted them over.
That's extremely low. So if she's tired, she's an iron deficiency. Yeah. But look at serum iron as well. Because here's the thing I find. When a lot of times, you know, practitioners are like, well, we don't have to look at iron. We'll just look at ferritin. Or we don't have to look at ferritin. We'll just look at iron. Well, they should both be low together, or they should both be high together.
Yeah.
And what I've seen a lot is that there's some issues with if the iron is high and the ferritin is low, it could be a melatonin issue. If the ferritin is high and the iron is low, that's not the pattern we should see. So that could be, a liver issue, a fatty liver, a liver inflammation, that sort of stuff. So it's really important that we look at things as a whole, that we don't try to look at people and compartmentalize them. So those are the things that she should be looking at. How old is she?
She is, I think she's 42. She said she's lost about 8 to 10 pounds in the past 3 months, and she's had a decreased appetite. I didn't have any, she couldn't get any vitamin D markers, because they just didn't do that, the last time she had her, labs, even though she requested it.
How close is she to the border?
She is in Calgary. So,
That's pretty far from the border.
Just
pop into Washington and they, they get their, labs tested at one of our direct access, like, Quest Labs has a couple of companies you can run direct access to.
I'll let her know that too, because I know she does go back and forth sometimes.
If she comes to the U.S., she should definitely order some tests. My favorite is Allen Hopkins Lab, and you can get that from runmylabs.com. He put together some panels for me and all. And you can get her to run some of the more comprehensive stuff. When you start to see a sudden drop in energy, right? You want to look at several things. It could be her adrenals are finally, her cortisol levels finally dropped after being high for very long. It could be the iron. It could be an anemia, right? You fix the anemia, the thyroid isn't going to get better. It could be something going on in her gut, like when you said low appetite, and it could be some parasites or something like that. And you want to rule out serious organic disease when you see a drop in energy and a drop in weight for no apparent
reason. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You want to rule those things out. And then, it could be the adrenals are just giving out right now. So there's a number of things, and it could be thyroid, but, she's low.
Right.
She's probably not likely to be a hypothyroid. Does she have, racing heart? Does she have sweatiness?
She did have that this year. Her heart, was palpitating, which kind of also made me think of adrenals or thyroid. But, and she's very type A, overachiever. Lovely person, but really takes on a lot. So I'm just concerned for her. She's near and dear to my heart. So that's
I would be working on, I would be looking at working on her stress levels. If she hasn't done any testing, I highly recommend the Dutch test, and they'll take it from Canada. You can just order it and ship it to them.
Okay.
And you can get that. If you go to the lab testing page, I think we gave you access to the lab testing page. You guys can you can order it from there if you want to.
Okay.
You ordering it for all your patients if you have a big, busy practice, because we don't have the capacity to handle them, because we have to one by one make the orders. But for people in the programs and you just want to do one or two here and there, no problem.
Perfect. Oh, thank you so much for that. Yeah, thank you. And
it's cheaper than on the Precision Analytics site I just discovered.
I'm sorry?
It's cheaper on our site than Precision Analytics if people go there and order it directly, which I just discovered.
Okay.
That I don't know why we priced it there. Hopefully we're not losing money on every test.
I know. And my other question, because I know she does take some supplements, I also didn't want to overlook, are there any supplements that can also lower blood sugar? Like, I'm really trying to look at everything with her, just to make sure.
Is she taking chromium? Is she taking powerful lipoic acid, magnesium, vanadium, you know, high doses of magnesium sometimes people take, and that can be a problem.
Okay. Okay. I'm just writing these down so I can mention these two. I'm just
In the nutrition module. You're an IRSPT?
I am, and I'm so far behind. My mom is actually under hospice care right now, so I'm trying in between everything. And I'm so sad because I can't go to the SHINE conference because of it. But I'm on the stress module right now, so I'm way behind. But plugging along there. Okay,
yeah.
So
if you go to module 3 and you look at the herbs and food, herbs and supplements that can lower it, you'll see some of them. But alpha lipoic acid, vanadium, chromium, ginkgo, ginseng.
Ginseng. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I know silymarin too, right? Milk thistle.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking of that. I wanted to make sure that she wasn't. Okay. Oh, this has been so helpful. Thank you so much, Dr. Reed.
You are so welcome. And I'm sending lots of healing energy towards your mom. And your family and dealing with the situation.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'd be at that conference otherwise, but I'll be there in spirit.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So thank for reminding me, you guys, who's coming to SHINE? You guys have free tickets to SHINE, and it's going to be amazing. We have added a new guest speaker. I was at a conference last week led by Ocean Robbins, and I was teaching there. And it turns out he's going to be in Austin right before SHINE, and he agreed to stay on, and he's going to be doing a presentation on the morning of SHINE. And he had some really good information that he shared, and I want him to share with you guys on medical education and the work that they're doing in helping to get more nutrition into medicine, because by having people work on new questions for their exams, like their medical exams, is quite interesting. They're very active at the Food Revolution. So he's going to be there, and Tom O'Brien's going to be there on Sunday. So Ocean's on Friday, Tom's on Sunday. Mike Mutzel, he's going to talk about autophagy and fasting. He's brilliant. And then we have Tricia Nelson is going to talk about some things we don't think about a lot, but with things like fasting and, you know, the insulin resistance diet that we put people on, food sensitivities and all the different diets that we try to put people on, what does that do to people who have underlying emotional eating problems that maybe they've come through, or they were bulimic or anorexic and whatnot? And she's going to talk about that, those things that we should be considering. And then Jeff Jackson's going to talk about how ketogenic diets and a sweet spot diet, if we're not careful, will affect the microbiome and some of the things that we can do to make sure that it doesn't decrease the abundance of short-chain fatty acids and all that the good microbiome need. Who else? Anna Quebec is going to talk about menopause and some of the things we can do to support people through menopause through diet. Alan Hopkins is going to talk about advanced lab testing strategies. So he's the one to answer those. Did I mention everybody? I think I mentioned everybody. Oh, and then we have somebody that I just contracted with to give us a talk on how to reach more people through LinkedIn. He's developed some really specific strategies that he's going to share through your profile. And I attended a lecture that he did a couple of months ago, and I was blown away by some real simple things that we can do with our LinkedIn profiles to help attract more people, especially in the field that we're in. He said it's a really lucrative for that, and he's going to share some stuff with that. So we've got a good lineup of people, and then I'm going to be doing a lot of other stuff in there and focusing on really using the diet and fasting and intermittent fasting and the role of keto and how you can do keto safely, and all those sorts of things are going to be covered in the workshop. It's going to be awesome, and the food is amazing. So you guys have free tickets. And then if you want to upgrade your ticket to the VIP, you have a general admission ticket, you can upgrade to VIP and get all the meals. So I'm excited about that. So I hope you guys join. You go to shinelivebonus.com, shinelivebonus.com to register. And I know a few of you that I see here are already registered. So star 2 raises your hand, or just the raise hand button. And I'll look to see if any more questions have been typed in. And Kiki, I saw that you came in. Yes, I right at the beginning, I did your questions. So, yep, I just did your questions right at the beginning. Glad you can make it. Okay. Let's see. Barbara from Tennessee joined. Christina. In a patient with progressive dental recess. Oh, yeah, that's the other piece. I have somebody coming in to talk about the connection between the mouth and the metabolic disorders, cardiac disease and cancer, diabetes, et cetera, and how some of the mouth infections and the dysbiosis in the mouth. So it's going to be an interesting talk. The patient with progressive dental recessions, in absence of obvious causes like grinding or infectious periodontal disease, and I'm evaluating for inflammatory gut issues, is there a supplement that might additionally help? I think that really focusing on the microbiome in the mouth can be super important. Some of the things that there are some probiotics that are chewable that you keep in your mouth or that you suck to bathe the mouth. Rhamnosus, I think, is one of them that's really good from mouth for the good bacteria in the mouth. We want to look at vitamin C and turmeric and things like that. Rubbing on the gums, some of these dental powders that work really well that are made with bentonite clay and other herbs can be put in, and you know, you brush your teeth with them, but also you can rub it in the tooth and try to keep, you know, packed in on the areas where the recessions are. Getting a good water pick kind of thing where you get in there and make sure that all the areas are cleaned really well. Chaga mushroom tincture has been shown to be really helpful, and so is neem tincture. Let's see. Jasmine, client who uses the bathroom 3 to 4 times at night. She says it's been happening for several years. She doesn't drink liquids at night. I have no idea what to suggest. She's insulin resistant. Any thoughts on what might be going on? Well, reversing the insulin resistance can help a tremendous amount. She may have a interstitial cystitis. So I would ask a question: when she gets up 3 or 4 times, is she urinating like full volume, or is it just dribble? It just feels like she has to go. She dribbles a little bit and then goes back to bed, or not so much dribble, but small amounts. So you want to look at that, because if she's peeing a lot out, there's something that's triggering her to be trying to keep electrolytes stable, and it's causing her to lose water, and she may be getting dehydrated. So I'd ask about dry skin, dry hair, you know, that wrinkly skin, that kind of thing, to see if it's actually, if she's getting dehydrated from this, or if it's that she really isn't peeing very much when she gets up, and you'd want to look at interstitial cystitis and food allergies and things like that. And then if she has a leaky gut, oftentimes people have leaky membrane, so leaky gut, leaky bladder, leaky brain barrier, blood-brain barrier. So I'd be looking at that. And some of the things that help with leaky gut can help to support a leaky bladder, but you have to take out the irritants. And I'd also look at oxalates, because sometimes if the oxalates are high, they irritate the gut. So those are things I would look at. But definitely address the insulin resistance. That's critical. And look at her gut. Chris, is this about estrogen ratios in this course? I'm not sure what you mean. Is this this course? There are several courses that we have, and this is our open office hour. So some folks in the course are doing insulin resistance, some are doing a digestive mastery, and some are in our full 2-year nutritional endocrinology certification, in which case we have a reproductive module where we talk about that. We were just recently talking about the Dutch test and the estrogen ratios, but that's not covered in the insulin resistance course. You'd have to go into our full course. And then in NEPT, we do case studies, and we're constantly, we look at Dutch tests more than any other test, so lots and lots of review about that. Let's What's the reason for making too much insulin? Yeah, so there's pathological reasons and there's the normal reasons. A pathological reason, if it's really excess, which is why I like people to get it tested, is there could be an insulinoma, a tumor in the pancreas or other place that's causing it. But the body will produce a lot of insulin for a couple of reasons. Dietarily, it's, you know, lots of processed or carbohydrate-rich foods that cause the pancreas to have to produce a lot of it to be able to get the sugar into the cells. And when that happens over the course of years or decades, people develop this increased production of insulin. So usually it's dietary, but it can also be stress-related or lack of sleep-related, where the body is in this hyperadrenal mode, producing insulin, cortisol, which is breaking down tissue into sugar and raising the blood sugar, and the body just produces lots of insulin. So over time, that usually develops into insulin resistance, but some people don't really ever develop full-blown insulin resistance. They actually just keep having the hyperinsulin with the low blood sugars. If the person's feeling fine, it depends on how high that insulin is. But if the person is feeling fine, the consequences can be developing insulin resistance. And that's a lot of what happens. That's why we teach you how to get people to test their postprandials, really capture how high is the insulin the glucose going, and either a continuous glucose meter or continuous pricking your finger over the course of, you know, days to weeks to get a pattern, and you can actually see how high the sugar is going and if that's what the problem is. Sometimes you get a stressful response, sugar goes up. I've had that happen. I've had my sugar go up to 150 after getting into a very stressful situation. Lack of sleep will cause insulin resistance. So somebody's not getting their 7 to 9 hours of sleep, and more close to nine is what many people with insulin resistance need, and that's a problem. Yeah. Shannon, looking forward to it. What are you looking forward to? Shannon, Shine? I hope so. Lynn Rose, Shine. Yay, I'm looking forward to meeting you. Yay. Lynn Rose, cool. Barbara, I'm excited about coming to Shine. Yay, so a lot of you are coming to Shine. I'm so excited. I love when I get to meet you guys in person, especially with this program where we do this. We still do these calls on Instant Tele Seminar, but I think we're going to switch it at some point to doing it on Zoom. My biggest concern on Zoom is that we have a 100-person limit. And usually we don't get 100 people, but we'll have over 100 people registered. And then when there's over 100 people registered, then I'm concerned about, you know, overstepping our limits. But we should try it and see, because I really like to be able to meet people and see them. But for now, we're here. All right, so let me refresh on the Q&A, see if there's any coming in there. Will Shine Conference be live streamed for those who can't attend? Hopefully. We always, you know, we're getting bids on how much it costs. We have to calculate how much it costs to live stream versus how much we can collect from live stream. So we really need to be able to cover. We can't run it at a loss. So hopefully, but we haven't made a 100% decision. We're still getting bids. And we, you know, even if you have a free ticket, we usually charge more for the public, but we do charge usually around $97 for people with free tickets to cover the cost of doing a live stream. It's not free. It's like a lot of money. So we need to be able to make it back. You know, we need to be able to figure out is it worth it. All right. No more hands up. Star 2, last chance for questions. We're in an hour, so good time to stop if there's no more questions. I don't see any more on the Q&A. I don't see any more hands. Let's see. Yeah, Barbara says, I like Zoom too. Yeah, I like Zoom. The reason we've kept to doing these calls this way is because you can have an instant, it's no work on our part, you can have instant access to the recording. Whereas with Zoom, we have to wait for hours, and then I have to have somebody on my team download them and upload them to a page. So it's more work, and that's one of the reasons we're still doing some of our calls on Instant Teleseminar. And Instant Teleseminar keeps telling us that they're going to have a video conferencing. They said it was going to happen as of, I think, May of this year, May or June or the summer, but they still haven't done it. So I'm disappointed with that because I do like the convenience of this as a broadcast system. All right. So no more questions on the chat. No more questions in the Q&A and no more questions on the thing. So I'm going to open up lines so we can all say goodbye to each other. And I just so appreciate you being here and being dedicated to making a difference in the world and making a difference in the lives of people who wouldn't otherwise have the information. So I encourage you to, not from a nagging perspective, but live by example and share with people when they ask you questions or when you're out in public. Share with people what you know and what you're learning, and I think you're going to make a huge difference. So I'm going to open the lines. Bye, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Have a great question.